Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For me, I learned very quickly that the top of one mountain is the beginning of another.
Hello and welcome to The Self Podcast, Advice to My Younger Self, where we talk to our cover stars about the things they wish they'd known earlier in life. I'm Self's editor-in-chief, Rachel Wilkerson-Miller. Our guest today is Self's March cover star, Emmy Award-winning actress Cheryl Lee Ralph. You may know Cheryl as the no-nonsense and boundary-protecting Barbara on Abbott Elementary, which is currently airing its third season on ABC. But Cheryl has had a long, impressive career that includes starring in the original Broadway run of Dreamgirls and appearing on the sitcom Moesha with Brandy. She's also the founder of the Diva Foundation, a national nonprofit focused on the prevention of and better treatment and outcomes for HIV and AIDS. Cheryl, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great today and good to be here with you.
Well, I'm so thrilled to be talking with you, and in this context in particular, because I feel like you have a lot of important wisdom that you can share with the world and with our readers. So I'd love to jump right in to asking you about some of the points in your life where you could have used a little extra advice from future you and ask you what you wish you'd known then.
Oh, my God. I would think, you know, my brain goes immediately to high school, where I want to say to my younger self, be patient, be patient, be patient, be patient with yourself and be patient with others.
I mean, those are both so hard to do.
Oh, my God. It's so hard to do. So hard to do. But over the years, I've learned it and I'm still working on it now, still working on it. You know, I remember once my father said, this will be the greatest and probably longest lesson of your life. And that is patience with yourselves and patience with others. He said, you're kind of fast. He says, get things kind of fast and you got to give other people time to catch up. And at the same time, you have to give yourself time to catch up. You know, don't be so quick to change things about yourself or, you know, be patient with your looks. Because for such a long time, I was so unhappy with the way I looked. And I just thought that, you know, if it could just be different, everything would be better. But now I look back at it and I think, my God, had I changed one thing, so many things might not have turned out so good.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny you brought up your looks because that was actually something I wanted to ask you about because when I was researching you, I was surprised by how much of the early coverage of your career touched on your appearance and basically said that you got called ugly a lot as a young person, like through high school, and then you go into the entertainment industry, which is so looks focused. It's also racist. And I think that would take a number on a lot of people's self-esteem. And I would love to just hear a little bit more like what that was like for you and how you dealt with it at the time. And you said, you know, you wish you'd been more patient, but, you know, just going through that specifically, what advice do you wish you had known at the time?
It was so interesting to be to be a young Black girl. And I was so happy because a song came out just when I was feeling so bad. And it was Nina Simone. And she said, to be young, gifted, and Black is where it's at. So it made me feel more empowered to love when they would talk about your nose being too broad or they used to say your lips are too big, they're too thick, and they used to call me liver lips. And I used to feel so bad about myself. And then, you know, if you were a shade or two darker than a brown paper bag, they were saying that you were too Black, mm-hmm. You know, and it was just horrible. And then, you know, I was so happy when Nina Simone got her natural hair because, you know, when everybody's talking about your hair, you know, I chopped mine off because she chopped hers off. And it was like a sense of empowerment. And had I known then that these lips would become All the rage, my God.
Is it wild to you to see that now, to see people trying to make their lips look more like yours?
Oh my, it's so crazy. It is so crazy. Had I only known. And to be a curvy girl, you know, I'll never forget one time a fashion house said, oh, they weren't interested in dressing me because of my the shape of my body. It was so vulgar with all of its ins and outs. And now thick is in. It's all the rage. Who knew? Crazy. Sometimes you just need patience and time.
Yeah. And kind of on the note of patience, were you, you know, your dad was giving you that advice. Would you say you were impatient when you were younger? Was that sort of how you describe yourself? And or what other sort of were the main qualities you had when you were a teen and a young person?
Oh, I would have to say, you know, what do they call Capricorns? Mm-hmm. Real go-getters. Oh, okay. My God. Once I got up on the mountain, I was not backing down. I wasn't going back. I was going up. I wanted to see what was up there on the mountaintop. So I was just going, going, going. And I learned how to be sure-footed, making my way there, being aware that, you know, not everybody makes it to the top of the mountain. Sometimes people slip and they fall. You know, a lot of times people drop off the mountain. So many things happen to people as they take the journey on their own private mountains, you know? And for me, I learned very quickly that the top of one mountain is the beginning of another. It just didn't stop. It was just a continuation. And what it took to remain strong, what it took to love myself on this journey, when so many people along the way want to tell you how you're not going to make it, how you should be on a different mountain, oh, you've chosen the wrong path, or you should do something else. And I learned really quickly that we start to listen to what everybody else is saying instead of listening to ourselves, or realizing that sometimes people talk to you because they're telling you about their experience. You know, I learned just because it didn't work out for somebody else does not mean it's not going to work out for me.
You strike me as somebody who's very confident. Is that accurate, or is that how you would describe yourself?
It's my superpower.
It's a good one to have. Have you always been that way?
Oh, no, I had to learn it. I had to learn it. You know, I learned to get my own team, because when I was little, nobody was picking me for their team. You know, at a time of integration, you know, white kids weren't picking you for their team. Black kids sometimes didn't pick you because of the way you spoke or where your parents came from, being an immigrant's child. So I learned very easy, pick your own team. Put people on your team. There are a lot of people feeling like a loser, just like you.
Yeah. That's really lovely advice. And I think it's true for whatever age you're at, but it's hard when you're a kid and you don't feel like you have that control. But it's nice when you get to a point where you can start to connect with others and build that team of who wants to be on your side, who's rooting for you.
Absolutely. It's important. And you have to really learn how to root for yourself.
Which I think is one of the hardest lessons, and it sounds so straightforward and so silly, but like that's a hard one lesson, I think, for a lot of people. Even if you know it in theory, it's hard to put into practice.
That's why I tell everybody, wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, and love what you see. And if you can't love it, respect it. And if you can't love it, lift it up. But by all means, be kind to it. Too many people are horrible to themselves. The things they say to themselves, I'm too this, I'm too that. Oh, I wish I was like this. Oh, why couldn't I be more like that? You know what? You got to come to the fact that you are what you are. Own it and move forward with that. You know, trying to compete with others, especially yourself, you just lose.
Well, I want to pivot a little bit to talk about your family. You are a mom to two adult children who you seem to have a really, really good relationship with.
I do.
I would love for you to think back on, you know, just motherhood and becoming a mom for the first time when your eldest was born, and what advice you really needed to hear at that point, or just any other advice you would give your younger self at a hard time as a mother.
I was very fortunate to have women around me, you know, like my mother, who shared so much with me about what happens, what you go through when you're having a child, what can happen, your body, things like that. And I'm shocked to this day how many times people and other women don't talk to each other and other women. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest books I ever read was What to Expect When You're Expecting. Such a good book, full of knowledge. And if nobody's going to share it with you, buy that book for yourself.
I think I read somewhere that you were saying you felt really grateful to have two, you know, safe and healthy pregnancies. And you know, I think that's a real fear among Black women that we're not going to, you know, we all know how serious the maternal mortality crisis is for Black women. And I really appreciated that you called attention to that and just said, like, this isn't a given as a Black mom. This is an important thing to pause and be grateful for.
Absolutely. I was also very blessed and fortunate that I had a Black male OBGYN. Mm. And this doctor cared for, he got ill and he passed away, and so many of the children that he had delivered into this world all came around to send him off. Mm. And it was amazing because he cared for us. If your doctor, because I was in distress at the delivery of my first child, but mm-hmm. I didn't know it. I didn't know I was in distress. You know, I thought that you had all of these people around when you delivered a baby. And he said, no, he said, you needed extra care. And I was like, oh my God. You know, very often women get into distress and they don't have the proper care. They don't have the person that says, wait a minute, what's going on here? What is different? What is different about this pain? What is different about the position of this baby? What is different about this delivery? And I was very fortunate to have Dr. Arthur Johnson, who did everything to make sure I came through on the other side with a healthy baby.
That's such a beautiful story and so lovely that his legacy was that all these children who or these adults that he had delivered as babies came forward to send him off. And I feel like when you find a good doctor, it's just one of the best experiences because it's hard. Like a lot of doctors, you know, they don't have the time or that's just, you know, they don't have the bedside manner. So finding a great doctor who really sees you means a lot.
And really wants to care for you. But when I asked for a Black doctor and I'm told, I'm so sorry, we're asked this all the time, but we only have one.
Man.
And I'm in a major city in America,
right.
And you only have one?
Right. You know, it's funny to hear you say that because I've been going to the doctor for, you know, 38 years, and it's never once occurred to me to ask for a Black doctor. Like, I didn't even think about it. I just kind of felt like, oh, you get who you get, and if you get a Black doctor, lucky you. But I didn't even think to speak up for myself in that particular way. So that's just another little bonus piece of advice that I'm going to think about a lot from here and why it never occurred to me.
You know, for me, it's certain things like, you know, being an African American of Caribbean descent, things like sickle cell. Mm-hmm. They, you know, somebody has to know those things, you know, the way we're treated differently and need to be treated differently. Sometimes when it comes to heart disease, high blood pressure, mm-hmm. Somebody has to be connected with your history because sometimes these are silent killers.
I know. It's scary. It's. I feel like every time you go to the doctor, it's just you're crossing your fingers, both in terms of I hope there's nothing serious wrong with me, but also I hope that if there is, I have somebody who can diagnose it properly and won't just
Correct.
Dismiss me. It's a very fraught experience. But actually, that's a great segue into what I wanted to talk about next, which is health and public health, and specifically HIV and AIDS. So
yep.
You've talked about being a Broadway actress starring in Dreamgirls at the time of the AIDS crisis emerging. And the way that you talked about losing so many friends, I found incredibly moving. You said in your one-woman show that, quote, AIDS blew out the flame of life like candles on a birthday cake up and down Broadway. And that just, as somebody who, I lost my dad to AIDS, like that really... like just resonated with me. I think a lot about the talent that just got wiped out, like a generation of talent that like we'll never have back. And so I have firsthand experience in a particular way, but I think yours is quite different and not something that everyone is still talking about and aware of. And so I wondered what that was like for you and if there's any advice that you could give young Cheryl during the early days of the crisis and what must have been a time of just like incredible despair.
Oh, I would tell young Cheryl, look, I know it's going to be hard. I know it's going to look like there's no end in sight. I know you're going to learn some very hard lessons about life and people, but that's good. That's good for you. And you're going to carry that with you. And trust me, it will all work out. I had no, I'm a child of the 60s and anybody can tell you anything about being a child, especially a Black child in the 60s. It was traumatizing.
I'm sure.
It was traumatizing to see, kids just a little bit older than you in the street being hosed down by fire hoses, being attacked by dogs, being killed just for fighting for their rights to vote, to be, to sit at the lunch counter, to eat, to live, to pursue their happiness, and to be killed and to see it right in front of you. Then on top of it, the number of men that literally got their heads blown off.
Right.
And I'm saying their heads blown off. And to see those pictures, there used to be a magazine called Life.
Mm-hmm.
Magazine and those pictures. Oh my God, it was terrible. So when I dared to care about people who were one, gay, sick and dying, people thought I had lost my mind. They asked me over and over, why would you do that? And I could never understand that question. Why would I simply dare to care, to fight for my friends?
Right. These are your people. It wasn't just, we should all care for everybody, but these are your friends. Of course you care.
Exactly.
Cared.
So I find it, I think about now being awarded for my work around HIV and AIDS, for simply doing what was right, to speak up for people, to visit them in a hospital, to hug them, to call their name when they passed away. In some ways, it's sad to be honored for that because these are the things that we should do for each other. But we find it difficult. And I find it very, very sad and disheartening.
It is. And I think sometimes I feel despair about how we just sort of dismiss. We're in the midst of, another virus and it's hurting the most marginalized people. And we're sort of repeating a lot of the same mistakes. And I feel really inspired by the fact that you took that despair and turned it into action and said, I'm going to do something about this. Because I think that's where a lot of us get stuck. We feel angry or we feel sad, but don't know what to do about it. And so do you have any advice on how to actually turn your anger or your sadness into meaningful action?
That's interesting that you say that because my children were recently honored by the city of Los Angeles for their work around wellness and illness. And it shocked me because I remember the day when my son said to me, he was in the street protesting with his sister and cousin around the death of Ahmaud Arbery, a young Black man who was killed simply for running. He was like a runner runs.
Right, going for a run.
Going for a run. And he stopped to look at a construction site and somebody said, hey, you. And that was the end of his life. They chased him down in the street. But my son said, if we do not heal from this pain, we'll be good for no one. And he took that pain and he turned it into a purpose by creating a space for his peers to raise their voices, use their voices to speak truth to the power of their pain out loud. And that has now evolved into their own nonprofit, Walk Good LA. And I think about, my God, my children were watching me these past 33 years doing my work around HIV and AIDS, taking my sadness around people's inaction to help other people and turn that truth into a power that has just been, for at least one or two people, life-saving.
So I wanted to pivot to Abbott Elementary, which was created by my fellow BuzzFeed alum, Quinta Brunson, and which earned you your first Emmy in 2022. And I wanted to talk about the joy and exuberance that came through when you accepted that award, which clearly resonated with everyone in the room, but also so many people watching at home. And your career seemed like it really like took off in new ways, even though you had been a successful working actress for years. But I was hoping you could share a little bit about what you were feeling the day before those Emmy Awards and what advice you would have given yourself heading into that moment.
Oh, my God. First of all, I was so happy just to be invited. It was my whole career. I'd never been invited to the Emmys. And the first time I am invited, I win.
I mean, that's a flex. So your first time there and you're on stage winning an award.
Oh, it was crazy.
It's wild.
It was just crazy. And to tell you the truth, I was very happy just being a guest. I was very happy just being in the room. I was there as a supportive artist to whoever was going to win, because I knew it wasn't going to be me. And when they called my name, oh my God, it was a moment for me to behold. And I was so thankful, so grateful, so happy. And I guess it just spilled out and the world felt it too.
I think so. And I mean, I think in everything, no one necessarily knew every specific detail of some of the things you were talking about your childhood and about all the things that you've been through. But I think we know when we look at you, you know, like no one gets through this life as a Black woman without experiencing racism and experiencing hard things. And so I think that's part of what meant so much. But also I think, you know, people have fallen in love with you on Abbott Elementary or in other work you've done. I mean, people know you from so many different things. And I think that also was just like, what a special thing to see somebody achieve this. Something that felt, I think, long overdue to a lot of people.
Well, you know something, I might have been, what did they say? It might have been a delay, but I was not denied.
Mm.
And to me, it's fine because everything is right on time. In God's time, in Mother Solar System, nature, whatever, in Goddess's time. And it's not going to happen before then. So, you know, and also for me to have it happen now, let that be known to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There is no time frame that is too bad or too late. It is all good. And God is there for you. Just hang in there.
Well, I think that's one of the things that people really love about you, that you are proof that women don't have to go away the moment they turn 40 or 50 or 60. And I think it's really nice to see what work success looks like in these later decades. And I think that's part of what people find so exciting. And it's like there's a new possibility that is visible when we look at somebody who is still achieving major career success. And it's not like you were waiting this whole time for career success. You've been a successful working actress for a really long time. But there's something about the fact that it's not over, that you can still have your first Emmy at any point in your life, that I think is really moving and inspiring.
Oh, absolutely. I'll never forget the time. I think it was the Titanic. And there was an actress in the movie. She was about 98 years old. She got nominated for an Oscar or invited to the Oscar, something like that. And she was an actress. And she said, I'm 98 years old and here I am. And I was just like, yeah, that's right. Here I am. 40 years and now I am an overnight sensation. Thank you.
Right. This many years in the making. And I think that, you know, again, I think people who are even in their 20s and 30s feel like it's too late for me. I'm, you know, my time has come and gone, and they feel like they can't achieve these things. And so I think, you know, 40 is an age when I think people kind of start to freak out of like, it's too late for me. And so I wondered if you have any advice, like how you were feeling when you were turning 40 and what you wish you'd known then, or maybe advice you'd give to other people who are about to reach that age.
Oh my God, turning 40. I took a picture of myself on that day. I wonder where it is. And I remember thinking, I'm a woman now. Mm-hmm. I am a woman now. And then I think soon after I hit a rough patch in my career and I was really questioning, you know, what do I do from here? And I ran into a big-time casting agent. And she asked, what are you doing now? And I said, well, you know, I'm not doing too much. And she stopped and turned around and looked at me. And she said, oh, do you know who you are? Because if you're not doing anything, it must only be because you don't want to do anything. And I was like, wow.
Right. Wow.
Wow. And it just sort of changed things for me. It changed, you know, how I saw myself and, you know, what I was going to do and what it would take to start all over again. And I literally did that for myself. And it was, I made some moves that, you know, it felt like the beginning, but it felt like the beginning that I needed to keep on striving to climb that mountain to reach my goal.
Mm-hmm. Well, my last question for you is, what is the best advice that you've ever received?
Oh my God. I would have to say my Aunt Virginia, who really wasn't my aunt, but always felt like...
That counts.
Yes, a great actress by the name of Virginia Capers. And Aunt Virginia said to me, be as kind as you can for as long as you can to as many people as you can, because the same ass you kick today, and she said ass, same ass you kick today, you might have to kiss tomorrow. Oh, now that was some good advice.
That's really good advice.
Oh, I'm telling you, the number of people I have seen coming up in my career who were giving you coffee one day, then running the company the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've seen that quite a few times. Be as kind as you can for as long as you can.
Thank you so much again. We're so thrilled to have you on Self's Cover. Everyone can read the incredible interview with you, see the photos, and we are just so excited to... I'm so excited to have gotten to talk to you today, and I'm really going to take your advice to heart, and we can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Advice to My Younger Self is produced by Haley Fager, Rachel Miller, and Wes Green, and edited by Haley Fager. Peyton Hayes is our audio production coordinator, and Jake Loomis is our audio engineer. Caitlin Brody and Sergio Kletnoy are our talent bookers.